Nobody can offer such great support as your partner. Hi, my name is Janka Slačková. Welcome to the next episode of the Echo Walks podcast. My guests are famous people who have one thing in common. They always follow their dreams. This journey may not always be easy, but they don't give up and become an inspiration to all of us. Well, one such person is here with me today on this walk. My guest is the Slovak presenter, actress, and hobby ultra runner, Lenka Poláčková. Lenny, hello, welcome.
Hi, and Harness, my dog.
Yeah. I'm glad you also introduced Harness, who started running right away.
Actually, I'm surprised that she took off like that. She thought we were going to be running, I guess.
She set the pace for us immediately, so that's great. The cameraman's already afraid of what will happen here today, so Harness, keep it up. We're looking forward to it. Lenny, I have mentioned you're a presenter, an actress, and a hobby ultra runner. Out of all of these professions or hobbies that you do and are good at, which do you like best?
You know what? Maybe it's a bit cliche, but I like to say I'm a professional adventurer. That's what I'm most comfortable with.
It means that you are literally running through this life, taking all the challenges that come your way and dealing with them as you go.
I mean that it's not only about running, but also about the mountains, lifestyle, different adventures, experiences, stories. It's a package of everything.
Before we unwrap this package, tell me, how did you get into acting? How did it all come about? By the way, I didn't know you were an actress before. I always saw you as a presenter. But how did you become an actress?
Well, I studied acting. But a doctor who doesn't treat isn't that much of a doctor. So I guess this is how I feel about my acting. I'm not sure if it was my childhood dream. It was more about the love of children's theaters, so it evolved somehow. I like to recite and things like that. And eventually it evolved into studying acting. And I did it for a while, up until a certain point, and then I kind of gave it up.
And then you entered the broadcasting world and became a presenter. How did you feel about that?
You know what? Always very good. I was more comfortable being myself than being someone else. Although experiencing other people's fates was nice, but I always was somebody's mistress and stuff like that. I mean, a mistress in a series, so it doesn't sound like I'm confessing to something here, okay? And I didn't like it. The roles were all very similar all the time.
Were you getting more negative and antagonist roles than positive ones?
I don't know. It was always romantic stuff. But, it was mostly the bitches.
Maybe your hair led the directors to...
To cast me into the role of a mistress that everyone hates?
No, maybe directors always think of a redhead for the role of a mistress. But it doesn't always have to be that way.
Right. So I liked it better working as a presenter. I could be myself, the more likable person.
So first the mistress, then the more likable person. Anyway, in my opinion, you were lovable in both of those roles. I can't imagine you as a negative character. But how did you get from all that to the hobby of ultra running? I can't think of a better name, you know? Have you always been inclined towards sport and running, or did it just happen somehow?
It happened somehow. From a classic morning run of 2 to 5 kilometers, I eventually got to 10 kilometers. Then I did my first marathon. 3 weeks after my first marathon, there was my first ultra marathon, when a friend said to me, "You know what? I've got something you might enjoy." And I said, "What could that be?" And he said, "Well, your first ultra marathon." Well, the ultramarathon is everything over the marathon. So I thought he would pick some 50-kilometer run, but he picked a 100-kilometer one. So at the 50th kilometer, I went, "Wow, I've never run more than this." And he went, "Well, and now it's another 50.
Oh, he suggested it, and then you were like, yeah, so I'll do an ultramarathon. I've done a marathon before, so it can't be that hard, right?
Yes, I thought it would be a little bit longer than the marathon. Well, it was 100 kilometers altogether.
But you went further than 100 kilometers because you've run much more than that, and you have done different races. So tell me, what's the longest distance you've run? Maybe what's the longest run you've ever done?
Well, when it comes to a single run in one go, the longest route was 125 kilometers long. But when it comes to stage races that lasted a few days, it was actually about 1,000 kilometers.
1,000 kilometers.
But it wasn't in one piece, of course. It was about 60 kilometers every day. It also depends very much on the elevation, whether it goes over some bigger mountains or whether it's at high altitude or lower. There are many factors, but it's always in the mountains. I don't run on tarmac.
Right, that's probably boring, isn't it? Running on a flat surface?
Oh, you know what? I think a long run on tarmac can surely hurt like hell, I guess.
Oh, okay. The knees suffer big time, I guess. Anyway, Lenny, I liked what you said. 125 kilometers in one go. If I did 125 kilometers in one shot, that would probably be the last thing I would ever do. All right. When you run those stage races, what does it look like to run? I don't know, with a tent on your back or whatever it is? You run, what, like, I don't know, 60 kilometers, sleep somewhere, get up in the morning, eat, run again? Or what does a stage race look like?
It depends. I ran in the northern Czech mountains without support, so I carried all my stuff. But usually the standard setup with my husband is that he does the support. In the evening, he brings the tent, food, and whatnot. Somewhere we agreed to meet. It means a run through a mountain area, for example, when we meet in the evening at the place we agreed on. He sets it all up, and the next day I pack up my stuff for my run and I go on. So it's not just about one person running, it's about the whole team, which in our case is two people. But support is essential in these cases.
You're one lucky duck, right? I dare say, because having support in personal and professional life at the same time, and the support being your husband in your case, I guess that's pretty convenient, isn't it? You travel together everywhere all the time. You're always together. Do you ever get cabin fever or always pull together as a team?
Well, there is a flip side. It is a double-edged sword. Nobody will ever support you as well as your partner. But on the other hand, you know, you say things to him that you often wouldn't say to someone else, right? And he has to deal with me and all the harshest emotions I experience when physically and mentally hitting the rock bottom. So, yeah, I would yell at him just because I'm tired, you know? I don't know if I'd call it cabin fever, but he has to put up with me when I'm in a raw phase during these long runs.
But it's incredible that even though you show all your faces, even the most negative ones...
He loves me, right?
He loves you.
Yes.
That's the prize of a lifetime. Anyway, Honza is here, very close to us.
Too bad he cannot be seen.
But I have to say that even now, he is really very good support, because dragging a cameraman along this route is a support. So not only Lenka, but also our cameraman has the support.
But you know what? He's a fantastic teammate. I'll give him that.
Well, Lenny, and does it ever happen to you that, I don't mean to say it this way, but that you give each other the silent treatment? I can't imagine that. I don't know, at the 300th kilometer, you have a fight and you don't talk until the 500th kilometer. That kind of thing probably doesn't happen to you. That cannot happen to you, right?
Well, I wouldn't call it silent treatment, but he already knows when to shut up, you know. So, for example, I come to him, throw my sticks on the ground to tell him, you have no idea how hard this is. And he says nothing and hands me some fruit and water. He's very patient.
Lenny, what do you eat when you run those stage races? What does it look like? What do you drink? Do you have a snack with you? Is it like in the morning, Honza packs it all for you? Here you have a sandwich with butter and peppers and apple and so on.
Almost. It's changing a lot. In the beginning, I would eat absolutely everything. But then when the body goes into an energy-saving mode, by the fourth day, the body starts to get used to the extreme strain. It also stops having such cravings to eat so much. And for example, when you run at a high altitude, which was the case in my last two runs, you can't even eat that much at that altitude, which isn't really good because then your body starts to get energy from your muscles and it's using those deposits. But I like everyday food. I'm not into some special gels or bars. So basically, yeah, the bread, the apple, and it varies. Sometimes, I don't know, when I was running through Colorado, for example, it had never happened to me before, but I absolutely loved oranges. I usually don't eat one orange all year. I don't know, maybe I lacked vitamin C, but then every day I was like, where's my orange? I take two, just in case. But it's individual. Yeah, ordinary food, I'd say.
Now, the journey that is still fresh in your mind, the last journey you did with your husband Honza, was a journey in Peru. It was, again, a long charity run, so you were not just running for yourself, but for a lot of other little warriors who don't have it easy in life. Please tell me what this trip was like, how much you raised, and what it was all about.
Well, Peru was a particular project. I imagined it so idyllically that I would just go there. There would be decorated llamas, you know, and rainbow mountains. But I chose a route called Capañán, which is basically a whole road system that the Incas built. And it's 30,000 kilometers long and...
But you didn't run the whole thing, did you?
Fortunately, no. I wouldn't be here yet.
You'd still be running.
And I chose the part of Capañán, which the Peruvians are trying to recover. But it's a particular route. It's not reconstructed. That means somewhere there is a road, somewhere there isn't. Honza was great with this. He helped me to put it all together and create some routes. I was running through areas where people had never really seen a person who was not local, let alone a European. So it was very extreme. Well, we always pick a project that we want to support. And that's how it makes the most sense for us to help hospitals. We alternate between the Czech Republic and Slovakia. Last year we supported, and we always try to buy some equipment for the hospital. Last year it was in the Czech Republic. Pediatric plastic surgery clinic. This year, we wanted to support the Clinic of Pediatric Hematology and Oncology in Bratislava, so they can buy a unique device that helps to diagnose brain cancer with the help of DNA, and thus to set up a more gentle treatment. Now, I'm not good with numbers, so now I don't know exactly how much it was. 127,000 euros?
137.
Oh, 137. See, you know better.
137,000 and 7,300 people helped along the way.
Yes.
You managed to get them excited together like that. Really, they kept track of where you were and how you were doing daily. It's really incredible.
And it's unbelievable. We reached the same amount the year before, but for the other project in the Czech Republic. It's interesting to see how many people want to help in some way, even with small amounts. And that they can always adopt my mileage through Instagram. You can also use those social networks for nice things. That's cool.
Lenny, you ran what? 850 kilometers in Peru?
850 kilometers, but at an altitude between 3,000 and 5,000.
So breathing was probably challenging. The body had a hard time. And did you prepare for it somehow? I don't know. In Slovakia, you probably can't get ready for it. What would you do? Live in the High Tatras?
Still too low.
Still too low.
Still too low.
Did you prepare for it somehow? Or did you say, well, I'm going for it. What's 4,000? I can do it.
After the experience of Colorado, which was at 4,000 kilometers, we spent some time in Italy. We did some acclimatization in 4,000 kilometers there, but we did it, I don't know, 3 weeks before that, so that was already gone. Well, we did that essential thing, finally. We did it when we got there. But I'm used to acclimatizing by going up to a certain altitude, so Honza drove me up, so, well, I slept in the car. Right, so he drove me up to 4,700 in the middle of the night while I was sleeping. I woke up in the morning, I was so terribly sick. Like, I really had altitude sickness at that point. I had a headache, I was sick, and he was sick, but we acclimatized, and that really helped a lot. And this whole project ended with him climbing Alpamayo. So he was almost at 6,000. I was at 5.5. And by the end of that project, I didn't even feel the altitude anymore. So, success.
What do you feel at the end of your run? What are your feelings when you finally reach the finish line? Do you say to yourself, oh, it's over?
Well, it was weird here because we called it Into the Unknown Together. They always have that continuity, those names of our projects. And it was about that. We were really in this project together. And the thing is that it ended at a high altitude. I don't even know how high it was. It was something under 5,000. And at the time, he was climbing Alpamayo. Hence, it wasn't the end for me. That wasn't that finish line. Because at that point, in the base camp, I turned into his support. And he was climbing the hill. I was supporting him. So we switched. First, I was feeling terribly tired and having stomach problems, so I wasn't that good a support. I was lying there at 5,000 kilometer altitude. I was sick. In these cases, everything happens during a journey. The finish line is not the important thing here. What is important is what happens when you're on that journey.
Lenny, Peru and South America in general is not exactly the safest place. Have you ever been scared for your life, either in Peru or before on your travels? Have you ever been terrified and thought, okay, this may be my last run, this is it?
For example, I was afraid to meet a cougar in Colorado. I've met one from afar. Actually, I've seen two cougars from afar, so it wasn't precisely a non-encounter. In Peru, I got robbed the second day or so.
Where? And while you were running?
No.
Like, I can't imagine anyone catching up to you.
Fortunately, or unfortunately, it was still in Lima, so it was on the street. It was like an actual mugging.
Wait, like the kind we see in the movies, or?
He was on a motorcycle. Someone sort of hit me, and the biker just snatched my phone.
Well, Lenny, it's like a Hollywood movie. You can't even be mad at them.
No, it was like from the movies.
From the movies.
And then we found out that in Peru, the crime rate had gone up to a 3 on a 5-point scale. And in the area that we went to, the crime rate was up to a 4. And I wasn't worried about myself because it was really safe in the mountains. But I was concerned, I was worried about Honza. Well, because all the Peruvians were telling us, you're crazy to go in a pickup truck somewhere in Peru. They're going to steal your car. They're going to steal everything. And actually, I was worried for him to be okay. But it was caused primarily by the poverty. But life wasn't at stake there. It was all about the material stuff, so it was a different feeling. I wasn't worried about myself, I was worried about him. And that's probably worse than the worry about myself.
What are the other extremes? We know about the highest altitudes you've run at, maybe the lowest or highest temperature you've run at. Me personally, I have the biggest fear of freezing once.
I hate the cold. For me, I'm like, I can't even imagine doing the cold exposure.
And you like the heat, yeah?
I love the heat.
Okay, the best for you would be the Marathon des Sables. But my husband told me not to run that one. It's in the desert.
Oh, okay.
You might like this one.
I might like it if I run a 60-meter run there, and that's where it ends.
Perfect.
Feels just about right, you know? Okay, but what's the lowest temperature you can run in, or have you run in?
Once I ran a very nice race, the Ice Ultra in the Arctic Circle in Sweden. And it was 35 below zero at one point of the race.
Oh, okay.
But it was so specific because I ran it all in snowshoes. There were 2 meters of new snow. And at one point, I tried to take off the snowshoes, but I couldn't do it without them.
You got lost in the snow, huh?
Well, I saw someone jump off a snowmobile. There was this trail made by that snowmobile that we were running on. He jumped off that snowmobile and got stuck in the snow, just like that. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess those snowshoes are a good idea.
I guess it's deep in here, huh?
So like 35 below zero, but it was a dry 35. So that's quite a pleasant frost. Very much so.
I'm like minus 30, dry minus 35. It must be swell to run in those snowshoes.
And there was also kind of a snowstorm, so...
Lenny, now you'll maybe change all of our lives.
Yes.
Because who else can I ask this question if not you? For example, when you go running 1,000 kilometers and at the 200th kilometer you get a blister, do you have a life hack? What to do with a blister, or has that never happened to you before?
Well, how authentic can it be? You want it exactly as it is, right?
As it is. What is it like?
Well, sometimes I get a blister in a blister. I mean, it's like there's two of them, one inside of the other.
Oh, okay. That's not the usual.
Well, then I have a needle and a disinfectant and I pop it.
Oh, okay. So that's how it's done when you get a blister.
Yeah, but you know what? It's better to prevent it. Of course, you can't do it on the long routes. But on the shorter ones, if I put Vaseline on my feet, I can do a 100-kilometer race without blisters.
Uh-huh. When you go on those runs of different distances, do you take a backpack or something with you where you have some water and food? Do you also take some cosmetics, a product that you cannot do without?
I do.
What is it?
I'm specific in one thing. I must have lipstick on me everywhere I go. And what I really do is... that sometimes, when I'm getting to the finish line, I take that lipstick out, like a kilometer before the finish line, and I put it on.
To make it to the finish line, huh?
You know, to have a good finish line pick. It's a must. It's ridiculous sometimes because, like, you're running on fumes already, right? There are these other runners out there with you running on fumes. And then there's this woman pulling out her lipstick to paint her lips.
Lenny, I think you make this final run more enjoyable for every runner...
You think?
...who is near you.
Yes, sure.
Because to see how a woman puts her lipstick on after running hundreds of kilometers... What's the lipstick shade?
Kind of like what I'm wearing now. Sometimes like less bold, but kind of like more natural.
More natural.
Yes, natural.
Like, I can imagine you finishing a race, even with that blood red lipstick.
No, no, I'm not that far yet. But it's good to have that option too, just in case.
Lenny, maybe one of the final questions. We are in the woods right now. I know you brought back a how-to guide from Yellowstone Park for the bears.
Yep.
If one shows up here now, by any chance, what should I do? Or you, I'll leave it to you. You seem more experienced.
Just keep calm. I probably try to keep us both calm. One thing that caught my attention is that a bear can bluff, which I didn't know before. It can even start running after you, you know? And don't take pictures of it, I guess.
No selfies with a bear.
Well, I probably wouldn't do that. But it can be bluffing that it is going after you. But it doesn't want to eat you, or it doesn't want to attack you. It just doesn't know how to scare you off anymore. And so, it'll run at you, might even bump into you, but it doesn't want to hurt you. So always keep calm.
Lenny, thank you. If one should show up, I'll move out of the way, and it is all yours.
All right, okay, and I'll sort it out.
You can have a chat with it. It's up to you.
Yes, but there was a grizzly in Yellowstone, and I can honestly tell you that I don't know if I would have kept my cool around a grizzly.
Our EcoWalks podcast today is at the end. Lenny, I have one final question for you, because we're at the observatory. We're at the stars. The gentlemen were complaining that they didn't have enough stars. So I said, don't worry, I'll bring you 2 stars. So I did bring them, as promised. Lenny, I know you don't talk about your plans.
This is because they would not come true.
I believe in this too, by the way.
Really? Okay.
So I totally agree. I'm not even asking. Instead, I would be interested in your motto or a message you would like to share with our viewers. Maybe what guides you, what helps you in life.
For me, on those long trails or long trail planning in general, when I was hesitant about whether to do something, whether it would be too extreme, it was good to look at the pros and cons, whether to go for it or not to go for it, then kind of forget the cons. And my mom always told me to write down everything I'm afraid of, all my fears, and go for it. And then look back to see if those fears came true. And most of the time, the things I'm afraid of don't even happen. Or if they do, it's not even that big of a deal. So not to be scared to go ahead and really not hesitate. One actually regrets what they didn't do rather than what they did. So I guess that's about it.
So I think great inspiration from Lenka, but also from Harness. Ladies, thank you for being here today and coming to this autumn walk in the woods.
Thank you.
Well, and Harness, thank you as well. She's not going to answer me, is she?
But she appreciates it very much. Like, she likes to go for walks and talks.
But I think she feels the same way. Well, I hope to see you on the next episode of the Eco Walks podcast. My name is Janka Slatkova, and thank you for being with us today. Okay.